You're listening to On the Record, the podcast of the Bristol Herald Courier. In this special edition, we're working on a project called Critical Mass, dealing with overcrowding in the Sullivan County Jail in Bluntville, Tennessee, and the Bristol, Virginia Jail in Bristol, Virginia. The reporting staff of the newspaper has spent the past several months working on this project. The first stories appearing on October 6th run through the following week. In addition, we're having a town hall in Bluntville, Tennessee on Wednesday, October the 9th. But in this installment of the podcast, we wanted to get the reporting staff together and talk about some of the takeaways that we had from looking into this and doing our reporting and visiting jails and talking to officials, talking to prisoners, and really trying to get our arms around what is causing the problem and kind of where we go from here. This is David McGee. I've been the lead reporter on the project, privileged to be so. And I want to say that probably my biggest takeaway was the sheer volume of pretrial inmates. And pretrial inmates are defined as someone who is in jail, but they have not had their case adjudicated. So either they haven't been to trial, they have not been before the judge, they haven't pled guilty, they haven't done whatever it takes to get their case completed. And the numbers are pretty amazing, actually. The numbers in Sullivan County Jail, they have roughly 1,000 inmates on any given day in their two facilities, and their numbers are somewhere around 60 to 65% pretrial inmates. These are all local inmates in most cases. In Bristol, Virginia, the number is somewhere closer to 50%, but that, to me, that was a shocking number. I knew it was a factor. I knew it was there, but I had no idea that it was such a prevalent number in the two facilities. So what we're going to do is talk through some of these things, and if anybody wants to chime in, and I'm going to ask the reporters as they start speaking to kind of give their names and introduce themselves, and we'll talk through a number of things. We've got a lot of topics we want to talk about, but anybody want to jump in on pretrial, because we've all written about some aspect of it, I think.
Well, I'm Laura Spell. I'm the Sullivan County reporter, and I have written about the Sullivan County jail facilities as part of Critical Mass. And as far as pre-trial inmates, you kind of have to think about the gravity of the situation. These are people that haven't been convicted. They're sitting in jail, possibly innocent, for months, sometimes years. And it's the majority of the population.
And the justice system is built on innocent until proven guilty. But in a lot of cases, this relates to bond. They are in there and they either don't have a bond or they cannot afford the bond that has been assigned to them by the court. So, for example, if you're in there on a $7,500, I talked to one female inmate. She was in the Bristol, Virginia jail on a $7,500 bond. You have to put up 10%, $750. She was unable to raise that amount. And so she's sitting in jail waiting to have her case heard. And we've heard this and seen this over and over again. So that's a really big number. That's, I think, going to be one of the big takeaways from the entire project, is we've had the sheriffs and other officials talking about that issue. I know, Laura, you and I were talking before we went on that one of your big takeaways was just the design of the jail. It's something you've written about a lot, and you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's a maze. There are two separate facilities, but the way the hallways are, they're very maze-like in the way that there's a lot of corners, there's a lot of hiding spots. It ends up creating a lot of safety issues, but also more of an expense for the cameras. You know, there have to be more cameras to see everybody. And something that I thought about as I was writing is I can't imagine being a new corrections officer coming in to work in one of the jail facilities and having to memorize where all these cells are. And the visibility, you can't see all the inmates. Between the two facilities, there are only three officers on each shift that watch the cameras. We're talking over 1,000 people. So
it'd be very easy to, if you were a corrections officer and you had to go into a cell that had 30, 40 inmates, mm-hmm. it would be very easy to walk into a situation and get into trouble really quickly.
Right. And some cells can have as many as 50 inmates. And so you could be easily overtaken.
And I would add, so my name is Tim Dotson, and I'm one of our reporters here at the Bristol Herald Courier, and I took a tour of the Sullivan County Jail in August, and I had never toured a jail facility before, so this was an eye-opening experience for me. But when I went, I had the opportunity to tour, you know, the different parts of the facility, speak with some of the inmates, and even for their side of it, this is, you know, weighing on them every day when they're in jail, the overcrowding conditions. So I spoke with one woman who talked about how she's been in and out of jails in the local area throughout her 20s. She's in her early 30s. And she said that this was the worst experience she has had this time around with the overcrowded conditions.
Being in the Sullivan County
Yes.
jail.
And, you know, she talked about how, you know, she has 30 to 40 other women in her cell. And that creates some problems where, you know, people are, they're sleeping on the floors, on mats, there's people on bunk beds. But also when you have 30 to 40 people, they all have different sleep cycles, for example. They'll have different things that they have to be at, different court dates. And so that, you have people moving in and out, and that also causes some problems for them. So hearing about the overcrowded conditions from the inmate side as well, it's kind of heartbreaking.
I know several of the inmates that I interviewed in Bristol, Virginia, had spent some time in Sullivan County at one point or other, and to a person, male or female, they all agreed that that was the toughest set of circumstances that they had to deal with. The overcrowding, the cramped conditions in the cells, like you mentioned, sleeping on the floor, and having to deal with all those different kinds of personalities. We heard more than one Sullivan County official say that it's harder to separate the predator from the prey when you have so many inmates that it's just hard, because you have there are some violent inmates, and they're gonna do what they can to maybe exert their authority in a jail setting, and if you're prey, then bad things can happen, and they've seen a lot of violence in that setting.
Yeah, and in Sullivan County, they've had to turn at least one unit into a fully medical unit for inmates that have, you know, they're in wheelchairs or they have walkers or they have chronic medical conditions. So Chief Jail Administrator Lee Carswell likened it to being a nursing home. And, you know, who would have ever thought that there could be a nursing home facet in a jail?
And a lot of elderly inmates, I remember walking through there, and there's a lot of elderly inmates in that unit that you're talking about. Leif, you want to?
Yeah, I'm Leif Price. I'm another reporter. I did a lot of the data work on this, but I also toured the Sullivan County Jail. And one of the things that really stands out to me about the extension is that some of the cell doors, they're in the isolated cells, right, Laura? Mostly, or are they just the smaller cells? But they open inwards towards the cell rather than outwards towards the hallway. So what guards at the jail told us was that it really gives the inmates all or most of the power in that kind of situation. And that makes me just think about how much anxiety it must cause for the guards, and that probably affects how they interact with the inmates whenever they have to open those doors.
Because you're not sure what you're going to encounter when you get on the inside and on the other side.
Well, that, and when they open the door and the door opens on the inside of the cell, the inmates now have control of the door.
Right. Exactly.
It was something Captain Dillard talked a lot about.
The other thing that struck me when we were walking around the annex is up on the hill just above the Sullivan County Jail. And that's one of the things that struck me, was just the design of that and how dangerous that feels. It just doesn't have a safe feel to it. Tim, you did a story about the rise in drug charges and some of that. You want to touch on that just a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, if you were to ask the question of, you know, what do 75 to 80% of inmates in our local jails have in common, the sheriffs, local prosecutors, some of the lawyers, they would tell you drugs. Now, not all of them face drug-related charges. Some of them are, in jail because they're accused of committing a crime that might be related to drugs. So, for example, maybe you're there because of a robbery charge and you were committing theft to obtain money to buy drugs. So it's not always clear on paper how many cases are actually tied into drugs. But what we do know is that there is a large rising number of methamphetamine-related cases. And so that was an aspect of this that I thought was interesting. You know, I think we talk a lot about, the opioid crisis, especially when we're in rural communities in Appalachia, but meth is playing a large role in our local criminal justice system. But on the other side of it is, how do we deal with this? And so another common kind of refrain I heard was, we need to address this as a public health crisis. But when you're addressing it as a public health crisis, there needs to be treatment. And what I heard from inmates, from lawyers, defense attorneys, was that there is a lack of treatment in our area. So there's, what I heard is that there's a need for affordable inpatient treatment facilities. And even when we do have facilities, there's other barriers that exist. Cost, wait list, transportation. So really, this is something that goes beyond just the criminal justice system itself, but it's working with nonprofits, community groups, hospitals, physicians. There's so many different moving parts to this issue beyond just the inmates and the judges and the police.
I want to follow up on that on two different aspects. Lee, you did a lot of the statistical research. I think you've got some numbers to kind of back up what Tim's talking about.
Yeah. And what Tim was talking about with meth, and this is something you can see in data from what the police agencies report to TBI or the Virginia State Police Department, and just what they'll tell you themselves is there's been a huge upsurge in meth in the last 4 or 5 years. It's massive. In fact, in the last 4 years, arrests for methamphetamines and other amphetamines accounted for about 24.3% of all drug arrests.
I'm guessing that probably ties back to the crackdown on opioids, because the prescriptions aren't as available. The laws are limiting the amount of opioids that a doctor can prescribe, and there's been a big crackdown on the pill mills, so to speak. So there's a lot less of those drugs. They were freely available a few years ago, and I think that maybe is one of the things that maybe has brought meth back. That seems to be something the prosecutors are talking about.
Right. Sheriff Jeff Cassidy has mentioned that too.
Yeah. Well, Joe Tennis, I know you interviewed a couple of former inmates, and they are engaged in different programming to try to help others. You want to touch on that just a little bit?
Yeah, this is Joe Tennis, Bristol Herald Courier, and I talked to Mr. Sean Statzer, who uses rap music and in a ministry now. And he really was a great human element to where you could go wrong. Here was a guy who grew up in a good neighborhood, but his parents had kind of a tight control on him, and it was always like trying to, so anytime he could get on the bad side, he would, because it was tempting. So what he ended up doing was selling drugs, and he was making so much money selling drugs that he thought, well, why do I even need to pursue music as a career? It would be a fun thing to do. And eventually, he was caught in Bristol, Tennessee. Now, he went to a variety of jails, but here's the interesting thing. The worst one that he was ever in, Sullivan County Jail, that everyone here has been talking about. And he said that even after it was expanded a few years ago, he said that still didn't do anything. He said they can build more cells, but all they're going to do is just lock more people up. And the overcrowding just keeps staying overcrowding. He said, really, the situation about overcrowding and maybe to try to find some resolution to this is to maybe look at how people are being locked up, to maybe look at maybe having their crimes fit why they're being locked up, or maybe finding some different avenues to get them to find a better life when they get out of jail. The other gentleman I met was a fascinating pastor, Stephen Davis, who is helping people here in Bristol, Virginia at something like a halfway house to really kind of get them together and to kind of lead them to a new life, especially through God and through his own ministry. Here was a gentleman who also grew up in a very nice family, but his daddy had died when he was a young man, and he did not have any sort of male figure in his life that could really kind of teach him how to be. So he grew up watching the guys who were selling drugs and had multiple women and such, and he thought, well, this is the way I want to be. So he kind of crafted his life around this kind of thing, and he went in and out of jails in Ohio. Well, he moved out here to Bristol, Virginia, to be near his mother and some relatives then, and just as soon as he did, it seemed, just a few days later, one beer led to some drugs, which led to a robbery, which led to him being incarcerated for years. And he also had been in multiple jails. And his story is also very fascinating to read because, as he said, just as Mr. Statzer said, worst jail he was ever in was in Sullivan County. This man said, worst jail I was ever in was Bristol, Virginia. So I think that kind of shows, just in talking with these two gentlemen who are now trying to lead people to Christ and lead them to just find new ways to express themselves without getting into drugs and getting into the wrong side and ending up in jail. But these guys are also saying, look, I was there. Something needs to be done.
One of the stories that I worked on dealt with alternate sentencing programs that Bristol, Virginia is trying to try to reduce the number of inmates within the city jail. One of those is drug court, which has been in place for several years. It has got some renewed interest and some renewed support over the last couple of years from the city council in terms of funding. So they're trying to get more inmates who have a drug issue into a treatment program, into a program where they are released into the public. They're able to work and sustain themselves. They go through regular ongoing testing. And if they complete all the steps in that, then they have a job and maybe they have a better chance in the future and less likely to reoffend, less likely to get back into the system. The other program that Bristol, Virginia started last year and is still ongoing is a work release program for nonviolent offenders. If they have, say, a 24-month sentence, maybe at the end of, if they can find jobs and find circumstances that will fit them after 16, 18, 20 months, they will serve those last 4 to 6 months, whatever it is, in a work environment. Again, they would be drug tested. They would be screened regularly to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And the judges are behind it. The city is behind it. The sheriff's behind it. And I know, Tim, you looked at some other alternative type programs too.
Sure. And I think that something to note about this is that there's probably people who would look at these kind of programs and say, we're giving these people a free pass. But at the same time, these are rigorous programs. Like, it is tough to be a person who's having to go through these, you know, drug tests, who's having to meet certain work requirements, and balance what life is like when you get out of jail and you're dealing with a variety of family factors and things at home. So, you know, Allison Arnold, someone who I know both of us have spoken with, mm-hmm. she's the director of Bristol, Virginia's alternative sentencing program. You know, she said something along the lines of, this would be difficult for a sober person to do when it comes to some of these alternative sentencing programs. So I think that's just something that I think we really have to emphasize here. You know, I think something I've been interested in is that, and Joe, you talked a little bit about this too, is how in the absence of some of these programs or with a lack of treatment facilities, I think it's been interesting to see how some of these different nonprofit groups have stepped into this space and also how some of these faith-based groups have mm-hmm. stepped into this space. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, offer classes within the jails, but some of them are trying to work with inmates when they get out. And I thought that was kind of interesting that you know, and with the lack of some of these affordable inpatient treatment facilities, you do see other groups trying to fill the void. And I thought that was interesting, mm-hmm. Thinking about the different actors in our community who see this issue and are trying to take action. You know, something else that I know we want to talk a little bit about is there's a rising number of women in our local jail facilities. You know, this is an issue with both localities, so Bristol, Virginia and Sullivan County, but it's more pronounced in Sullivan County. So I believe the jail was built for 143 female inmates, or the way it is at the moment, it can house 143, but I think it was like 28.
When the jail opened in 1987, it had space for 28 women.
Yeah.
In 1999, they added an expansion of 115 beds that brings that total up to 143 now.
And, you know, when I went on my tour of the jail in August, they were, had 276 women behind bars that night. And that's, I think that's pretty typical to exceed that number.
Yeah, it usually hovers around 300. Yeah.
And, you know, I asked prosecutors, I asked the sheriffs, I said, what is driving some of this? There's been an increase in inmates for both men and women, but it's been especially pronounced for female inmates. And they were saying that drug cases are a large part of this. You know, and something that Jeff Cassidy talked about was drug violations and also probation violations. That was another thing that he thought could be a factor that's driving this. So that's, I thought that was another element of this. You know, there's some unique factors that, that female inmates might face that some of the men are not. You know, I've seen a national statistic that I think it's like 80% of the women who are in jail across the country are mothers. And so a lot of them have family responsibilities. Not saying there's not fathers in jail, but that there are you know, women who might have more family responsibilities than some of the men do in their jails. And that was the case for some of the women that I interviewed and how that weighs on them when you're in jail and you have, you know, children who are growing up, you're not there, or you have elderly family members that you're supposed to care for.
Exactly.
And some women are pregnant in jail.
Exactly.
And give birth in jail. Well, right. At a hospital and then come back to jail.
Yeah.
So, and as far as the female population in Sullivan County, like I said, it hovers around 300, which one of the architects that's working on a master plan for the jail facilities for the next 15 to 20 years said that that population could be its own facility, could fill its own facility compared to most jails in Tennessee that house men and women. So we're talking a full female facility, and they're trying to find space for these women away from men. They have to be separated, of course, by sight and sound. So that poses a lot of challenges.
No question. Leaf, you got something you want to...
Yeah, what's actually pretty interesting is that in the last four or so years, the arrests made in Sullivan County by the various departments, the sheriff's office and the city departments, men did commit more drug crimes, did get arrested for more drug crimes, but a higher percentage of the women that did get arrested for drug crimes were for methamphetamines and amphetamines than men that were arrested.
That's definitely a driver. Anybody else got anything else you want to throw? I've got one point I want to make as we get ready to close. Anybody else want to throw some other takeaways into the conversation? Or
I would add that one thing that, as I mentioned, Allison Arnold, she's someone that I'd interviewed for my articles and reporting. You know, she said something that kind of stuck with me, and she said, we can't just jail our way out of the issue. And I think that was reflective of a lot of the different people that I spoke with, from, you know, officials to the inmates themselves, is addressing, you know, especially the drug side of this as a public health crisis. I think there's some consensus around that. But there's just a lot of questions of what will that look like? Because at the same time, you do have an expanding inmate population, and you do have to make sure that we're taking care of those people. So there's questions here about the facilities themselves, but also how are you going to get people from avoiding being in there in the first place?
Right. And I think some readers may think, well, why should I care? You know, that they did the crime, they should do the time, throw them in there and throw away the key. Well, maybe we should consider that these are still people. Sheriff Jeff Cassidy pointed out that their civil rights are being violated in the conditions that they're living in. So the county is facing, could face lawsuits. The feds could come in, take over.
Well, the county had their back against the wall a couple times here in terms of...
Yes, they've been facing decertification since 2014. And they've had overcrowding issues the entire time the jail's been open. It's a never-ceasing problem.
And you bring to a point that something an issue that I raised when we first started planning and talking about this subject was, how do you make the average reader care? And going through this and doing the reporting and the research, it really struck me that there are so many ways that the average citizen can become embroiled within the criminal justice system. You don't have to go out and commit some heinous crime. You know, you could get arrested on a simple DUI. You could lose your job and be unable to make a child support payment. You could get into a dispute with a neighbor over a boundary line of your property. You could be involved in a messy custody fight over a child. I mean, there's a myriad of ways that the average person can unwittingly find themselves, sitting in the back of a cruiser in handcuffs, and 30 minutes later they're getting booked into the Sullivan County Jail, and maybe they're there for 24 hours. Maybe they can't make bond. Maybe they don't have the money. They don't have the family resources. We live in an area where a lot of people live at or below the federal poverty guidelines, and maybe they're going to sit there for 2 or 3 months before their case gets adjudicated. Even if you're innocent, it's very easy to get in this situation. And I think we've looked and seen that the situation could be a whole lot better. The overcrowding in both jails is horrendous. I mean, Bristol, Virginia is having to pay other localities fit to hold 50, 60, 70 prisoners on any given day that they don't have room for. So it's a real problem in both localities. The special section is called Critical Mass. That's what we're working on here at the Bristol Herald Courier, and it's going to play out the first full week of October, starting on Sunday, October 6th. You've been listening to a special podcast of the Bristol Herald Courier for Critical Mass. We're on the record.
On the Record is made possible by David Cricker, Delana Matthews, David McGee, Nate Hubbard, and Tim Hayes. Thanks for listening.